kinds of cocaine chased with cocktails of Xanax and Kettle One vodka. I said goodbye to a couple of visiting friends, left my distraught 81-year-old mother alone to clean up after my bloody homecoming, and finally shut my eyes to whatever was waiting for me out there in the deepest darkness I had ever known. This was the second worst day in all my 46 years. I had just murdered Dennis Pegg, a longtime family friend, my boyhood hero. I killed him without mercy, face to face, up close and personal, with my bare hands and a razor-sharp knife, the same knife he taught me how to sharpen when I was just a kid. Dennis Pegg was a lot of things to a lot of people in my rural hometown of Stillwater, New Jersey. Besides having served as a Boy Scout leader and helping with Cub Scouts, he was a retired sheriff's lieutenant who used to supervise the Sussex County Jail. He stayed active in law enforcement, doing weapons proficiency training for local police officers. He was chaplain of the local American Legion post and vice president of the county birdwatching club, served as a nature guide, and as a friend of many families, he was widely known for teaching area boys to fish, hunt, and drive a stick shift. He was also a serial pedophile. Over the years, he molested scores of kids. I was one of them. Dennis Pegg raped me when I was 12 years old, and at the time, I had no idea there were other victims. I thought it was my fault. I kept my rape a secret bottled up inside me through adolescence into adulthood. A secret I kept from my parents, best friends, and girlfriends. I told no one until that very night when decades of rage finally exploded and left me drenched in the blood of my rapist. By that night, I was already an alcoholic, a drug addict, a compulsive gambler, and a hopeless loser at love and life. I couldn't hold a decent job. I couldn't maintain a romantic commitment. I partied like a madman running for his life, probably because that's exactly what I was doing, running for my life. Until that moment, I finally snapped. And as I drifted off to sleep, trapped in a new nightmare, feeling somewhere between homicidal and suicidal, my future seemed almost certainly limited to a cell in some New Jersey state penitentiary. No wonder, then, that my sincerest hope that night was to never wake up again. Spoiler alert, I did wake up, and I did see the inside of a state prison cell. But I'm telling my story now as a free man, free of prisons real and imagined, and free of the crippling addictions that never let me escape my past. It is still a tale of horror about a kid terrorized by a trusted friend and abuser. But time has also made it a tale of redemption and recovery, and a true love story about friends and family and second chances. Part 1. The Hole in My Heart. I guess you could say I started out flawed. My heart had a hole in it the day I was born. Even the routine childhood illnesses I would face in the years that followed were potentially life-threatening. And it seemed I was always sick. Simple colds turned into bronchitis or pneumonia and made my parents especially nervous, because what about that hole in his heart? So, as the youngest of three kids, I was the coddled little brother. I was special. Special as in fragile. While most of my pals enjoyed all manner of roughhousing, running, jumping, pushing, and shoving, I had to be protected. They could have fun. I had to be careful. Meanwhile, doctors were afraid to operate on my heart until I got bigger and stronger and healthier. Then, one day those options narrowed. They discovered the hole was now the size of a half dollar, and it was growing. Chapter 1. The Scar. If only I'd gotten a quarter for every doctor visit